cautious as serpents, innocent as doves. Increasingly, Jesus' disciples in Estonia were experiencing the truth of their master's warning, "Prove yourselves cautious as serpents and yet innocent as doves. Be on your guard against men, for they will deliver you up to local courts, and they will scourge you in their synagogues. Why, you will be hailed before governors and kings for my sake, for a witness to them and the nations." Matthew 10:16-18. However, some who had commendable faith did not fully grasp that Jehovah does not always provide miraculous protection against Satan's tyranny. Some witnesses were not always as cautious as serpents as they should have been, and they became easy prey for cruel persecutors. "There was an interested man who seemed to be very zealous and bold," recalls Adolf Kose. "He was given responsibility in the congregation and was very popular among the sisters. The brothers became suspicious, though, and warned the sisters not to take him to all our meeting places. Regrettably, some failed to heed the caution, and the man was able to pass on a great deal of information directly to the KGB. The following is from page 189 of the printed edition. The KGB and our organization. At the end of the 1940s, the secret police made concerted efforts to discover how the work of Jehovah's Witnesses was organized. In order to obtain information for the KGB, some individuals pretended to be interested in the truth. The accompanying chart in the printed edition, found in government archives in Tallinn, shows that the KGB were quite well informed. It includes the names of the brothers on the service committee, those overseeing the work in the major cities of Estonia, and those involved in the printing work. Returning to the account, "In 1950, relates Lembit Tom, we received some copies of the Watchtower from Germany, which we wanted to share with all our Christian brothers in Estonia. An assembly was planned in a hay barn out in a secluded part of the country. The KGB, though, became aware of the plans and prepared to arrest all the brothers and sisters. They set up an ambush, positioning two truckloads of soldiers at the railway station where the brothers were to disembark. Three witnesses were waiting at a prearranged milepost on the road to the assembly site to give delegates directions. One of the brothers heard a suspicious noise in the woods and went to investigate. Suddenly, he found himself looking down the barrel of a gun. The soldiers took him back to where the other two brothers were, and all three witnesses were placed under arrest." When Lembit Tom and Ella Kikas, later Tom, realized that the three brothers had been arrested, they reacted swiftly. They jumped on Lembit's motorcycle and rode as fast as they could to a preceding railway station to warn the brothers who were coming on the next train. Lembit and Ella hurried to the station, rushed onto the train, and quickly got the brothers to disembark. Consequently, when the train pulled into the station where the KGB officers were waiting, they were disappointed to find that there were no witnesses on board. Meanwhile, other brothers quickly located another farm on which the assembly could be held. Then they had the delegates walk along a quiet side road for more than 6 miles to the new venue. All the while, soldiers were driving back and forth along the main roads searching for the delegates who had mysteriously disappeared. The assembly was held without disturbance, with 111 in attendance. The atmosphere was very somber because everyone was aware that at any time they too could be arrested. The program included reports about the brothers and sisters in other countries, including faith-strengthening experiences about Jehovah's Witnesses in the Nazi concentration camps. Even though this escape from mass arrest proved to be of short duration, that assembly provided crucial guidance and strength for the tests that lay ahead. The following is from page 191 of the printed edition. "She was never silenced by opposers." Ella Tome, born 1926, baptized 1946. Profile: sentenced to a total of 13 years imprisonment, but released after serving 5 years and 6 months.
The authorities put me in solitary confinement for 3 days to get me to renounce my faith, so that I would no longer talk to anybody about God's government or believe in it myself. The officials shouted, "We are going to make it so that even the name Jehovah will not be remembered in Estonia. You are going to a camp, and the others are going to Siberia." Tauntingly, they added, "Where is your Jehovah?" I refused to be a traitor. It is better to be in the camp with God than to be at home without God. Even in the prison camp, I never considered myself confined. I always felt that Jehovah had allowed me to be taken there to preach in my new territory. In one camp, I used to go for a walk every day with an interested person. Then, one day, we decided not to go. Later, I learned that on that day, some religious fanatics had planned to drown me in the river because of my preaching activity.
Ella was never silenced by opposers and still serves Jehovah faithfully as a regular pioneer. The following is from pages 193 and 194 of the printed edition. Jehovah, let your will take place. Lembit Tome, born 1924, baptized 1944. Profile. In Estonia during the German occupation and then in a Siberian work camp from 1951 to 1956. Lembit was one of many young Jehovah's Witnesses who refused to be recruited by the German army and had to go into hiding. One night, police officers raided the home where Lembit was staying. They had received a complaint that a suspicious-looking man was hiding on that farm. Lembit quickly hid his bed and crawled half-dressed under the floor. He could hear the sound of the officer's boots reverberating just above his head. The policeman pointed a pistol at the farmer's head and shouted, "Someone is hiding in this house. How can we get under the floor?" The farmer remained silent. "If the one hiding there does not come out, we will throw a grenade under the floor," screamed the policeman. Then Lembit saw the beam of their flashlight as they tried to see him. All Lembit could do now was pray, "Jehovah, let your will take place." "The mental stress I was under," recalls Lembit, "was almost unbearable, and I crawled to another place under the floor, almost ready to come out." Then he calmly lay down, and after an extremely stressful few minutes, the police left. Lembit waited where he was for about another hour to be sure that the officers did not return. Then, before daybreak, he left the house to find another hiding place. When the Soviets took over, Lembit faced other tests. "I was sentenced to 10 years in a camp in Norilsk, Siberia, a 5,000-mile trip from Estonia. That meant hard work in an open-pit nickel mine. Living conditions in the camp were substandard, and the work was extremely exhausting. In the northern part of the Soviet Union above the Arctic Circle, winters are hard. The temperature can drop to minus 20 degrees Fahrenheit, and sometimes much lower. For 2 months in the winter, the sun does not rise above the horizon." After 5 years of slave labor, Lembit was released, and in 1957 he married Ella Kikas. Through the years, Lembit also helped in translating and printing literature. He is known as an empathetic, warm elder, always ready with a scripture to strengthen his fellow servants. Returning to the account. Interrogated and sentenced. One by one, during the next few months, all the responsible brothers were arrested, along with more than 70 publishers and other people who had some connection with Jehovah's Witnesses. Jehovah's peace-loving servants now faced seemingly endless interrogations, while those still free knew that they could be next. Because interrogations were usually done at night and went on for months at a time, detainees were not able to sleep properly for long periods of time. As they became more sleep-deprived, the mental stress became increasingly debilitating. Brothers were sentenced without a court hearing. They were simply told what their sentence would be, 5 to 12 years in prison or work camps. The majority received 10-year sentences. Their crime? Anti-state propaganda and subversive activity, according to the official records. Shortly thereafter, the law changed, and witnesses began receiving 25-year prison sentences. After being sentenced, 63-year-old August Pressraud reportedly exclaimed with irony, "Thank you to the honored court for giving me such a long sentence. I estimated that I would live only about a dozen more years, but you have given me a quarter of a century." Witnesses were sentenced to notorious prisons or labor camps throughout the Soviet Union, mainly in Siberia and Russia's Far East or Far North, where conditions were harsh. There seemed to be no hope of return, and many prisoners felt it would be easier to die. Even false brothers who collaborated with the authorities did not escape the oppression of the persecutors. A case in point is what happened to two brothers who became spies for the KGB. Right after they had fulfilled their task, they themselves became objects of persecution by the KGB. Both of them were exiled to prison camps. The KGB did not seem to have any respect for those cowardly informants. From Estonia to Siberia. Now that the KGB had arrested those who were considered to be the most prominent witnesses, they were determined to root out every one of Jehovah's Witnesses remaining. The offensive was conducted in the early morning of April 1, 1951. In an extremely well-coordinated maneuver, all parts of the country, as well as Latvia, Lithuania, and Western Ukraine, were targeted simultaneously. Virtually all of Jehovah's Witnesses, many of their close relatives, and even interested ones were taken quickly from their homes, gathered together at several railway stations, and put into boxcars. They were allowed to take along some food and personal items, but the rest of their property was confiscated. On that day, without a trial or any explanation, nearly 300 people from Estonia were taken by rail to Siberia, mainly to the region of Tomsk, some 3,000 miles away. Brave young ones. Corinna Anika, 17 years of age, and her 13-year-old sister, Anna, had been away visiting relatives. Imagine their distress when they returned home and discovered that their house was all closed up and their mother was nowhere to be found. However, on learning that their mother had been arrested, they were somewhat relieved. Why? At least she was alive, Corinna says. Realizing that others had probably also been arrested, we thought that at least mother must be together with Jehovah's people. We really felt strong support and peace from Jehovah. I didn't cry, and neither did Anna, who is somewhat sensitive and frail. On Monday, we both went back to school and didn't mention to anybody that our mother had been arrested. Corinna and Anna remained calm even when officials came to take them away. In our train carriage, everyone was calm, continues Corinna. One sister comforted us, saying that Jehovah will never allow tribulation beyond our strength, and that we needed to trust His promise to help us. The girls remained separated from their mother for more than 6 years. Indicative of the irrational hatred of the persecutors is the exile document of a 6-month-old baby. The crime for which the infant was being exiled was enemy of the state. The deportation was very traumatic, and exiled ones were humiliated and disgraced in every possible way. Every morning and evening, everyone was let off the train to go to the lavatory, even though there were no lavatories. It was below all standards of decency and humanity, relates one sister. It was impossible to separate the men and the women. Other people would walk past us, and the guards all stood around watching us.